If you are live with us, go ahead and type just a hello in the chat section on the side, and we will be happy to say hi back to you. My name is Shelley Kino. For those of you who may be joined because of my guests today, I am an educational consultant and a master IEP coach, and I work with families with someone in their family that has a special need that's in the public school systems, try to navigate that system, and I have been a former special education teacher and just loved working with the families. And so after over 25 years in education, I said, I'm done. I'm going to go work with the families now instead of working with school districts. So that's what I do now as a master IEP coach. And I have met Fran about 10 years ago, I think we decided the last time we had our chat. And Greg, I met in 2006, so 14 years ago. And they both have a child with Down syndrome. And then Fran also has her daughter who has multiple disabilities. And if she wants to talk about those, what those specifically are, that's fine. But if she doesn't mention them, that's okay too. So I'm going to pop up a picture really quickly of Greg's daughter. She just graduated high school. So we are all very proud of her and very excited for her. And these are Fran's kiddos and Mr. Man in his cute tuxedo there. Was this like homecoming?
It was a Pujols prom we were going to.
Oh, nice. Okay. Awesome. All right. So back to the three of us. So the things that we're going to talk about today, I want to just jump right in because these are heavy topics and there are things that I think could be talked about for a long time. So I definitely want to be wrapped up in under an hour. And if we do it in less time, even better. But in order to move it over to Instagram television or IGTV, it has to be under 1 minute long. So I had to edit out some of yours and mine from the last time, Fran, which was fine. I just got rid of like 2 minutes, which was us trying to see if we were really live. So it was no big deal. One of the main things that we're going to talk about today is when you both found out that the child that you had, because Fran, I'm not sure of your story, or the child that you were going to have, Greg, was diagnosed with the Down syndrome or some sort of disability. So Greg, I'm going to let you go first because it was your idea to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. So yeah, we found out, Madison, who we didn't have a name for at the time because Lisa was still pregnant. She was on one of her routine pregnancy checks and a test came back less than normal. So they scheduled her for an amniocentesis. And that's when we found out for sure that this child we were about to have, because I don't want to call her Maddie because we hadn't picked the name at the time.
Right.
This child that we had was indeed absolutely Down syndrome. So that was a little disconcerting. We did our homework. We went online. We asked people that we knew. I personally didn't have any experience with special needs children. So immediately, human nature as the way it is, I anticipated the worst. And there's one poignant moment in my life before Maddie was born where my wife and I were sitting on the steps in our house and I just broke down. And Lisa asked why I was crying. And I said, because I don't know if I can measure up. I don't know if I'm up for this. This isn't something that the cards were dealt, but I don't know if I can pony up. Mm-hmm. Since then, and after she was born and we started raising her, now I feel foolish that I felt that badly back then, but it was the fear of the unknown. But
sure,
that was an emotion that I went through.
Fran, when did you find out?
Well, also with Luke, I did have the triple screening, and they said, well, it did come back that there was a possibility that my son had Down syndrome. However, I chose not to have the amniocentesis as I wanted to know if it would change anything, or I didn't want to risk the pregnancy because I knew there was a possibility that that could cause a miscarriage. So I just researched Down syndrome, but I did that and then I just left it. And then till he was born.
Okay. Greg, you and I have talked about this before, and you did research as well. Was that helpful to you, or did you find that to be more detrimental?
No, it frightened the bejeebers out of me. That's what it did. Because, I mean, it was solid research, and it was responsible for me to know, but it runs the gambit. It can be, you guys know. So,
well, but our audience may not. So if you wouldn't mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, we learned that some children are born with heart problems. I mean, serious heart, that might not even survive the birth. To things that were less concerning, but still, you know. So we did the right thing. We learned what we needed to know. That was responsible as would-be parents for her. But it scared the crap out of me.
Right. Yeah. And both your children are 20, right?
Mine is.
Yeah. Mr. Man is 20, right, Fran? Oh, it's numbers. Sorry.
Allie, how old are you and Luke?
I'm 21. Or I'm 20. He's 21.
Allie's 20. Luke's 21.
Okay. For anyone who wasn't with us last time, or just as a reminder, Fran has had a stroke, and it has affected the part of her brain that deals with numbers. And so she has a hard time saying numbers and knowing that sort of stuff. So that's why she just asked.
Oh, good.
And that's a topic we were going to talk about some other time, is now that you have a disability, how people perceive you and what that's all like. But So this was 20 years ago, 21 years ago, that you were both researching Down syndrome.
So it was outdated then. It was so out. They were just starting the process of realizing that people who happen to have Down syndrome are more like us than not like us.
Yeah.
Like nursing. That was one of the things. Don't nurse your child.
Really?
They can't. They'll have a with a low muscle tone, they'll have a terrible time being able to latch on. Actually, he was much better than my daughter. So, you know, you just can't go with that.
Right.
So.
And Greg, I know one of the main concerns that you had expressed to me during the time that you were all pregnant was you were worried about the heart. And was there going to be any major problems with that? Do you want to share the point that you got really, really mad?
So, well, before I even answer that, I just want to begin by saying all of the support, therapy, the school systems, everything that the state of Illinois has provided has been above reproach. It's been phenomenal. Much more than I would have expected.
That's good.
Yeah, right. But so it was like, it was her mother's 3 months before she was due. And we got the regular checkup that you're supposed to get. And the doctor that we had repeatedly asked us if there was, and actually, I'm sorry, it was in her first trimester. It wasn't that late in the pregnancy. Kept asking us, would you consider doing an abortion? And then she would apologize while she was saying it by stating that it was law that she was required to do it. Okay, so I get it, right? It's law. Give us that option, but not repeatedly. And she did it for that appointment a couple of times and the second one. And that really angered me. And I'm not an angry man.
No, but he's not. He's probably one of the most mellow people that I know.
But yeah, that was very disconcerting.
Yeah. So Fran, I'm taking it by your reaction that that was not expressed to you.
No, I didn't. I'd never heard that as being law in, no. Yeah. Wow. That blows me away. I do know that, when Luke was born, there were, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Okay. When he was born, they were all looking at him.
And they didn't know that he was supposed to be born with the Down syndrome.
And then, can I share a quick story?
Of course. That's what this is all about, is your guys' story.
It's not my story per se. It was a friend's story, who had a child with Down syndrome. But when their child was born, they were like, is my child alive? Is my child? And they weren't answering, and they weren't going to tell her. And they kind of said, your kid is retarded and has Down syndrome. And I was like, oh my goodness gracious. So part of my journey since Luke was born has been to educate medical professionals. I've spoken with first year medical students at SLU. I did that for quite a few years when the kids were younger. And I've spoken to college students and educators because I want people to realize that these are children who happen to have Down syndrome or any other different ability.
Right. And it breaks my heart that we are 40 years past when the federal law was enacted to start acknowledging exactly what you just said. And that was 20 years ago, but unfortunately I've still heard situations in the last 5 years or so. And having been a former special education teacher, I saw the reactions from other people that I worked with, other people in, you know, our communities, and the expectations and the line of thought that many of them had regarding the student population that I worked with. I had the great privilege to work with Greg's daughter for many years. Mm-hmm. And he gave me the biggest compliment a few months ago when he told me that he thought I was like the most experienced person ever when it came to working with people with Down syndrome, because he trusted me so much. And just, he said, I just thought you were great. And I said that she was the first person that I'd ever taught that had Down syndrome. But I guess it was my approach and how I put things out there that you thought that about me, Greg.
Well, it was that, but also, you were very forthcoming. Come on. You know, I have a tendency to spoil Madison, and you,
no.
Yeah, and I still do. And you know that, but, well, like I said, you're the only person in her entire life to include today that we've ever allowed take her somewhere without one of us being present. And that's still true today.
That gets me every time, because that's an experience that is so foreign to me, who has a typically developing child. I mean, she, by the time we took Maddie and we went to the buddy walk, my daughter had been at countless sleepovers and out with different family members, and the enormous amount of weight that put on my shoulders that day when you said that to me as we were getting her in the car was like somebody had just hit me upside the head with a sledgehammer because I had never thought of that. And that was a deal.
Do you remember where I was when you brought her back?
Yeah. Sitting on the tailgate of your truck. Yeah. And we were like a half an hour later than what we thought we were going to be. And this was before really cell phones. I may have had one at the time. I can't remember anymore, but, you know, it wasn't like it is now where you don't even walk out of the house without it. So, you know, I hadn't called to let you know or let Lisa know. And, so do you mind sharing, like, after we left, what was that like for you and Lisa? The one and only time, well, it wasn't the only time, because she did spend the night with us once, but right. You know, that was the time, first time. What was it like when we drove away with your daughter?
Huge. My mind was racing. I kind of second-guessed myself, even though we trusted you implicitly. It was a big deal. We talked about it, her mother and I, and a couple of times when that whole notion came up. But at the end of the day, we both said to each other, you know, if we don't ever do this, what's it going to be like? And how fair is that to Maddie? Maddie probably needs that as much as maybe we do. So that was the rationale we applied when we made the decision to agree to have you come pick her up. But it was freaking huge. It was not easy.
Yeah. And you guys just kind of, you said, wandered around the house. Like, I don't know what to do without her here. Cause we're always with her 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And she was what, 7, I think at the time, somewhere in that age, 7 or 8, something. Seven. Yeah. 6, 7. I don't remember if it was at the end of the first year or if it was at the end of the second year that, we did that walk, but anyway,
Yeah.
So Fran, I know your parents are very involved with you because you live very close to them. Mm-hmm. Greg and Lisa were away from family. So, did you have experiences or an experience like that or not so much?
I'm kind of the opposite. Well, actually my son doesn't even live, he lives in a single person Scylla group home right now. But you know, they say it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
It takes more than a village. It takes a bunch of villages and a bunch of other. Luke was a runner, is a runner. So literally it takes a village to chase him sometimes. But
I was going to ask if you would explain that because I mean, all three of us know what that means, but maybe someone watching doesn't.
Yeah. Luke, since he was little, he just took off. As he got older, he was a little slower taking off, but if something interested him, he left. And I mean, it could be a matter of I would have my hand on him, I would take my hand off to do something, and I put my hand back down, and he'd be already gone. There was a picnic here in town, a church picnic, when he was little, and I lost him. I was paying so he could ride that little train thing, and he was gone. I mean, but everybody stopped. They stopped Quilt Bingo, so you know it's serious when they stopped Quilt Bingo. And he was actually trying to get into the school because that's where he went to early childhood. So that's where they finally found him. But it was just, and I my kids are close in age, and there were times, you know, I would hold one and I'd be like, okay, I can't let go. Well, sometimes you got to pay for something or you got to scratch your nose or something and you got to let go of one. It's like, okay, if I let go of this one, what's going to happen? So,
right.
But, yeah, so my parents, were very helpful, and I actually had respite care for Luke from early on, because then Allie was delivered early. So, it was kind of like having twins cause Luke wasn't walking and I was working full time as well. So I just couldn't balance everything. Oh, and I was in school. So, I had to admit, and it's a process. that I can't do it alone. I need help. I need the Lord, and I need all the people the Lord brings into my life. And I just, Greg, you know how you were nervous when you sent Maddie with Shelley. I have to, when I like with Luke now, I can't control who his staff are, but all I can do is pray and ask that the Lord protect him and put people that love him around him. And, Allie still lives at home. So.
Yeah. And, Greg, you get Maddie, what, every weekend now?
Yeah, I get her every single weekend. When the COVID first hit, I of course couldn't go to work, but I worked from home, and her mother and I made a conscious decision for a month. We just kept her there, and which was horrible, but
right.
I still believe it was the right thing to do. But now we're back to, we're both comfortable with her coming over. In fact, she's here right now.
Oh, she is?
Okay.
Oh, I'm glad you got her. So you got her a little early today instead of waiting to get her later.
Yeah, there's a little different. There's a complication with her grandmother, her mother's. Oh. Yeah. But anyway.
Okay.
So she called me and asked if I would take her early. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
well, if she wants to come and say hi and you're fine with it, I would be ecstatic to see her, but I'm not going to force that on you or her. So, and my mom just commented because she knows her. So she said to tell her hi from Kino's mom.
I'll be sure to pass that on.
All right. So is there anything else? So we talked about, you know, kind of what you, the emotions of what you went through when you both found out your child was going to be born with Down syndrome. And you both found out in utero. So we
no,
had a
I
little,
didn't.
Oh, you did not.
Well, I mean, I found out there was a possibility, but I didn't find out till
he was born
and they did the karyotype.
Okay. So Greg, do you want to talk a little bit more about when she was born and like kind of just very quickly the whole learning curve of, because you have three older daughters.
Sure.
So
right.
You had been through having a child and, you know, all of that before, mm-hmm. being a dad before, but this was completely different.
Whole different experience. So, when it was decided that she was going to get a C-section instead of waiting and do natural birth, we went to the hospital. I got to tell you how impressed I was. So when we got there, they got her prepped for surgery. They moved me into the room for the C-section. There wasn't just the normal team to deliver the baby. There were two teams. There were a ton of people in this operating room because they were there before the C-section even started to have them pre-positioned, and their whole goal was to take this child right immediately after the procedure, which I was pretty stunned they went to that extreme, which now that I think back on it, wasn't an extreme. It should be the normal, right?
Right.
But they did that. And I remember when she was born and they literally didn't even let Lisa see they kind of like showed her quick and then said, okay, now we're giving her to these people. And then they took me and said, hey, we're taking her to NICU. We think you should go with us unless you really want to stay with your wife. And I remember standing up against the wall and I actually almost passed out because I was like, I didn't know what the right decision was. And Lisa turned to me nonchalantly and said, Greg, go with your kid. Just go. So I went, and there was this nurse. His name was Randy. And
I know Randy.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine there's too many male nurses named Randy. So
this guy was awesome. So he had her, and he made sure I followed, and we got her in the little whatever NICU thing is like they got because it's got a tent and all that. And he did a whole bunch of testing he had to do right away. And then at some point when it was a natural stopping point for him, he just turned to me and very calmly said, so you're Greg, you're the dad. You know what Maddie's, or at that time, yeah, we knew Maddie. It was Maddie. So he knew too. He said, so you know what Maddie's all about? And I said, yeah, we're all read in. We know she's Downs. He goes, okay, I just had to check because I wasn't for sure. And every single thing that man did to my child, he explained in graphic detail before, during, and after everything that he was doing. And it was just the best possible care anyone could ever hope for, whether it's a special needs child or just a regular child that needed NICU. It was amazing.
That's awesome. So Fran, you said when you had Luke and I guess they didn't have that same prep, maybe because you didn't have the full testing, but I would have thought, knowing that there was a potential abnormality, that they maybe would have prepped, but I'm guessing that wasn't the case.
No, I was actually, my labor was induced because I ran out of amniotic fluid. And then I wasn't supposed to have them. And I actually went into labor sooner than they thought they were going to have to. They started it and then they were going to wait till the morning. Well, Luke was born in the middle of the night. He was so easy. He just flew out and he was done. So what he was. So
I'm just thinking, yep, he's impatient and easygoing. So that seems right.
Yeah, it was. It fit him. And if we're going to go with that, Allison, yeah, she did. The cord was around her neck. And so yeah. I'd push, she'd go and she'd come out a little bit and she'd go back in. So, you know, they were there. It fits.
Yeah, it does. But that's funny.
Yeah. So,
funny.
Yeah, he was. And Luke actually, when he was born, they took him away, but then they brought him back in my room. But then he was really lethargic, and it ended up in he had polycythemia, red blood cells, and so he had to stay in the NICU for a while, and they did some medical stuff, and he was in a little isolate for quite a few I don't know days.
Yeah,
lose track.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Greg, Maddie was. What day and a half?
Almost 2 days. And by the way, her mother couldn't see her during that.
Right.
So I was doing the back and forth thing to reassure her, you know, everything's good. All that crap we learned about, hardly any of it's coming to, you know, awesome. To be realized. And she's healthy as a horse.
Yeah, she is very healthy. And that was, you know, I remembered that you had mentioned that there were a lot of things that you had discovered in your research that were possibilities to somebody who was born with Down syndrome. And so in that first 36 to 48 hours, whatever it was, they were doing lots of tests and everything was coming up solid good, but you still weren't 100% okay in believing that everything was going to be okay.
No, I wasn't convinced. And then there was another incident on her first well baby checkup that was a little frightening too.
Yeah. So for both of you, what was it like? And Greg, you'll be able to speak to this a little better than Fran because Luke is her first child. Whereas, like I said, you have three older daughters. So kind of give us a general overview of like just some big differences that you can think of between your three other daughters and Maddie and kind of them growing up.
You don't mean at time of birth, you're just talking about growing up in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as opposed to my three previous daughters, when you try to compare Madison to that experience, the experience that I had, there was a lot more, we were both full-time workers. So there was a lot of having to figure out the logistics of how we provide the care that we believe that she needs. Oh, by the way, while we're learning what that care should look like. And the therapy that the state provided, and that they would literally come to our home, but that one of us had to physically be there, obviously, for all of that. And I guess the biggest thing was us having to work really close to each other to make sure we both felt that she was getting the care. And another big decision was when we decided to put her into daycare, because that was kind of a big deal too, right? So that her mom could go back to work. But you know, she had a really bad problem with spitting up. I forget the term she gave us, but I'm talking like 3 years of this. And that was a real challenge, but that also influenced our decision when we thought other people could care for her, you know, whether we paid for it or not. We didn't have family, like you mentioned, because we were both military at the time. So, but you know, after we got over all of that, aside from the fact that she has Downs, she was like every other normal kid, to be honest with you. She really was, with all the personality. I mean, it took, you know, those 3 years or 2 years to get all that. I remember one distinct, we had this occupational therapist that was working with her when she was still an infant, right? And she did this thing where she wouldn't crawl. She like scooched. She drug one knee bent behind the other. And that's how she got her nickname, Budgie, because she would make this sound, Budgie, 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 and she would scooch. And we don't call her that anymore. She deserves more respect than that now. But the goal was, when the occupational therapist started working with her so young, she asked, what would be our goal, right? Just like you've done, Ms. Earl, done. And we said, well, I have a niece that's due to get married at this month, not that month, I mean, X amount of months away.
Right.
And she's been, we've been asked to have Maddie be a flower bearer or whatever. And the therapist really annoyed the heck out of me. She said right straight up, she said, well, I've only started working with her for not too long, but I'm not so sure we can make that goal. Guess what? She made that goal.
Yeah. Yep. Very cool. And that's, like I talked about earlier, having those expectations and expecting the kiddos to achieve as much as they can, and not putting, one of my hashtags that I use on almost every post that I put out is no limits, because I have seen amazing things that I was told, oh, you probably shouldn't waste your time working on that with that student because they're never going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And Maddie is the one that I think of the most, because I had some people tell me when she was in the first years that I had her, that I was wasting my time teaching her to read.
She reads.
And yeah. And that was like the greatest moment in my teaching career, I think, when she read a book all by herself. And I took her down to a couple of the people who had said she would never read. I was like, here, check this out.
It was as frustrating and as angry as I was with that one therapist when she was so little, making that comment. What it was actually a positive experience for me and her mom, because what it taught me right then, when she was just itty bitty, is we can't just rely on any kind of support or all the support that we're giving. It's on us too.
Right.
And that's what that taught me, that whole experience, because she did walk and she hucked those flowers all the way down the aisleway.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, I believe Lisa told me that there were two other flower girls in that wedding and they did not cooperate as well.
No. Well, they, yeah, it was sort of overwhelmed, which is weird, because one of Maddie's things is, you know, she gets overstimulated visually, right, and audibly. And you would have thought that would have been the place to do it, because she's walking down a thin aisle with a job to do and all these people on both sides of her. But it wasn't her that got overstimulated. It was her two cousins.
Yeah. Yep. That's a great story. So Fran, is there anything that you want to share as far as being a first time parent and kind of what you thought maybe your life was going to be like versus what it was once Luke was born?
It was a whirlwind of therapies. He had, you know, in-home therapies, and then they had group therapies and doctor's appointments. I saw him as a blank slate, and I wanted him to help him reach his fullest potential, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And so that was my job, was to help him get there. And you were right, Greg, you fast realize that you are their advocate. You will have to do things you don't want to do, that you're not comfortable doing, because you want the best for your child. I've been blessed to have people come alongside with me and advocate. I have something falling off the wall. But I've had people come alongside to advocate with me. Yet I know that I still have to be their advocate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very, very good point. And speaking of, that's a fabulous segue into, you both have filed for guardianships for your children. And I definitely want to touch on that. And we're at 35 minutes, so we only have, you know, like 20 minutes that we can cover that topic. But I want to make sure to touch on that. If you can explain, and it doesn't matter to me which one of you, or if you both explain it, because maybe you had different experiences with it. What am I talking about when I'm saying you filed for guardianship?
You want to go first, Fran?
You can go.
I got.
I had to do it a couple of times, so go ahead.
Okay. So that was another very less than, and I'll try to keep it short, less than pleasant experience. It was actually horrible. Not only did we have to hire a lawyer for Lisa and I, but we had to hire a whole nother lawyer to represent Maddie. And leading up to the trial, one of the things we had to do was take Maddie to her lawyer's office, and the kind of questions that person asked her had her in tears.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was horrible.
We had the exact opposite.
Oh no, it was more than tragic. It was terrible. We made it through it. We got her the heck out of that office. Apparently we satisfied whatever questions he felt he was required to ask Maddie, who probably 50% of them, Maddie didn't even understand why the heck she was being asked them. I was so angry at this guy. And then we got through that. We actually went out to eat just to calm her down. And then I had to go back to work. Got through all that, made it to court, met with our lawyer. Maddie, of course, had to sit in the table on her side with her lawyer, which was just as confusing for her, because she kept looking at us like, why the hell are we sitting over here and she's over there? But that worked out okay. Then both our lawyers started presenting the case for why it would be appropriate or necessary for us to retain guardianship after her 18th birthday. The judge didn't seem to understand what we were even doing there. In fact, he asked that question. He's like, so, okay, I get it. But I knew what he was thinking. He's looking at her saying, oh, she's special needs, so why are we here? That's literally what he asked. And then it was our lawyer that said, sir, she's turning 18. And then the light bulb popped on. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. And then it was like literally 3 minutes later and he rendered a decision. The part that was the revelation that I had is her lawyer, who at this point I despised. I hated him for what he put Maddie through. Stands up and said, Your Honor, do you mind if I have Madison go behind the bench and talk to you and meet you? And the judge said, absolutely. They spent the next 5-6 minutes with her behind the bench with him just visiting. And that taught me another lesson, because I hated this guy. Mm-hmm. And he had the wherewithal to do that. And he was a younger guy, younger than me, younger than Lisa. But it was a very humbling experience. but so, it just seemed it. I still have a hard time understanding why I had to pay for two different lawyers. This was a no-brainer.
Right. And unless I missed it, I don't think you explained what it means to file for guardianship over your 18-year-old. Why did you have to do that in the first place, and what does it mean?
Okay, well, there's several things. Actually, one of them is for tax purposes, we get a benefit by being able to claim her as a dependent beyond that age. Insurance eligibility. There's actually a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff I don't even know. But the so there's this notion of emancipation. Have you heard of that before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's the law says after 18, you're automatically emancipated, and then it's incumbent upon you to be responsible for your own welfare and everything. And mm-hmm. that wasn't going to be the case with her, and isn't and won't be for quite some time. So that was our number one priority, and why we were so motivated to retain that guardianship, because she still requires our care. Is that
right.
What you were looking for?
Yeah. So Fran, I'm going to let you speak to filing for guardianship for both of your kids. And if I have found out in the last couple of years, first of all, that even had to be done. But secondly, that there are different, I don't know if levels or maybe options word to use. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if both kids have the same level.
Yes, so you can file for guardianship of the person and of the estate.
Okay.
And I am guardian of both for both children, but I'm not the sole guardian. I have co-guardians. I have a co-guardian with Allison, and I have, the word left me. I'll come back to it. It'll come back. Successors. I have successors with Luke. Yes, I had a wonderful attorney, and Greg, you didn't say actually what they say you're doing when you take your daughter to court. You're suing your daughter. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You are literally taking your child to court and suing them and saying that they are unable to care for themselves, and that it's horrible, because as I've spoken before, I never focus on the negative, or I try not to. And you have to. Whereas your Maddie's gal, guardian ad litem, asked her all those questions. My attorney worked it so that she was able to speak with both of my children's gals, and to kind of prep them. And she even Luke likes unsharpened pencils. And so she had a pack of those when we went to court, and she handed them to him so that he could hold them and fiddle around with them. And we had a little roadblock when we got there. We were unable to go before the judge we were supposed to, because it was a conflict of interest, which I totally understand. And I respect this judge for doing that. However, we were all there, and it was like, okay, we really need to get this done. And my son, he's developmentally he likes Caillou and Barney and VeggieTales still at this age. And so he had his pencils, and he was happy. And when they called him up there, well, Luke really likes police officers. So he bypassed the table, and he went up and talked to the court officer once we finally got going. So, it was pretty painless with Luke. Allison was a little more difficult. There was a little more trying to work out all the details and making sure, because I want her to be as successful as possible and be as independent as possible. But I also want to be there and be able to help her. And as you were saying, when they're emancipated, your healthcare won't talk to you. The insurance company won't talk to you. And even now, still, I have to send their guardianship papers. And then sometimes they're like, well, I still have to have their permission. I said, how are you going to get my son's permission? You're going to ask him a question. I said, we look at the document. That's a legal document. So this is one area where I feel like I'm constantly having to educate myself so that I can be the best advocate. Once again, and coming back to the advocate for my children, that they can get through in life without being taken advantage of.
And can I add something to that real quick?
Absolutely.
So you're spot on, friend, because if her lawyer would have provided the opportunity to explain carefully to Lisa and I before he asked all those questions in his office, it would have helped, because I wasn't thinking of it in terms of suing her. But you're absolutely right. And why he had to do that was because he needed to confidently sit before that judge as her defense attorney and still give the judge the comfort he needed in order to render the decision that we all agreed on to begin with. So that's
right. Great.
I didn't know that at the time.
And thankfully, I had been around this field, so I knew that bits of it, but I was in tears. When we were in court and they were like, they were saying, okay, I was the plaintiff and this was the defendant. I'm like, that's my kid over there. That's not a defendant. That's my son. That's my daughter. So those are the times where sometimes it's hard and you have to put a shell on. And sometimes finding that shell to put on is hard.
It caught me completely by surprise, because it was a no-brainer in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm listening to the two of you thinking, I can't imagine the feelings and the thoughts that go through your minds as parents, your child's mind. I understand, you know, that, like you said, Fran, that you are suing your child. And just the what that does to you mentally, you know, because you're doing what you believe to be best for them, but you wouldn't think that in that process would be suing them. When your children started to approach that age, how did you find out that you needed to do this? Were you contacted by the state to say that this was an option, or were you just...
It was never told to me by an official person.
Okay.
I told people. I told the teachers during the IEP meetings.
Okay. Greg, I'm getting the same.
Yeah, we knew better. But, you know, just to cover everything we have to do as parents for her beyond the age of 18, that was absolutely necessary. We knew at least as much as we needed to, from a law perspective, that had to happen. So we took it upon ourselves.
Now, I know someone who had filed for this for their child 25, 30 years ago, and they have to redo theirs every year. Now, I don't know what type of, and I don't know what kind they have, but this person actually in 2019 had a situation where her paperwork didn't get filed by the deadline. She had it in her vehicle. She was, you know, just had never gotten it in the mail. And they actually had a warrant out for her arrest and had police come to her house and knock on her door. And, you know, thankfully she had a nice policeman who didn't haul her off to jail. But when I talked to her and then I talked to you guys, you guys were kind of once and done with this process, or do you have to do something every so often?
There's paperwork we have to mail in every year.
Yeah.
And what does that paperwork entail?
I can't remember. Just the gist of what you've done in their care. and how you handle their finance, the decisions you've made.
Okay. Yeah. So do you kind of have to account for, you know, they bought themselves shoes or they, you know, paid rent or whatever you and they determine is how they're going to spend their money? Is that kind of some of the justification in the paperwork?
So, I'm not really sure about the justification. Well, because I'm over their estate as well. Yes, I do have to keep track of that. There was a question in your live comments. I don't know if you want us to respond to that.
Well, yeah, because Greg, you talked about it, and I don't know if you saw this or not, but it says, is this still the case today when your child can be insured until they are 26 if they live at home?
And so, yes, it is.
Okay.
They cannot, an insurance company will not talk to the parent. Even if your child is under your insurance, they will not talk to you about them if you are not their guardian. I know this from a friend who has typically developing children,
right,
that are still.
Yeah, I mean, our daughter is still on our insurance, but as far as when we take her to the doctor, they won't talk to us.
Right.
You know, they're only going to talk to her about stuff. And, you know, same with college. If she had not signed on some paperwork that we had access to financial information or grades or whatever, they wouldn't have shared any of that information with us either. So I kind of wondered that myself when you said that, Greg, that you like the insurance stuff, but I guess, yeah, paying for it, they don't care who pays for it, but legally they're only going to talk to certain people about the label, the diagnoses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have just under 8 minutes before we hit the 1 hour mark. So, thank you, Mom. That was my mom who asked that question. so thank you for that question. That was a very good question. Is there anything else that you guys want other parents, whether they have typically or non-typically developing children, to know?
I guess the biggest lesson in my experience with Madison is for any would-be parent, whether it's before they're born or during they're born or slightly after, is don't panic. There's a ton of stuff out there to support what you're about to go through. And I know it's human nature to always anticipate the worst, and I wished I never would have done it. Like that day I sat on the stairs and cried. I feel foolish that I even had that emotion at that point, but I didn't know. Had I known what Maddie was going to turn out to be, that thought would have never crossed my mind. So that would be the only thing, is have courage and be gentle with all your exchanges with everybody, negative, positive, or otherwise.
Thank you. Fran, what would you have to say?
Ditto. No, but it's true, because sometimes as their advocates, we come in like a mama bear, a lion, and we fear that everyone doesn't desire the best for our child, or that they don't realize, you know, they're not paying, they don't know our, but a lot of them have education and life experiences that can contribute to our children. So why should we cut them off? And if we tear them down the first meeting, it takes a really long time to repair that. In the educational field, I've discovered that. Medical, just, yeah.
Yeah. And that is, I think, why I love doing what I do now, because I do have that opportunity to build those bridges between school teams and parental teams and make things more collaborative and cooperative, hopefully. Now, I always tried to do that as the teacher, but I'm finding the more meetings that I attend, the more families that I work with across the country, that is not the case in too many situations. And so, yeah, remembering that those people who are sitting at that table with you are human. And to be honest, I think a lot of them are driven by fear. They don't want to look foolish. They don't want to look, inadequate. They don't want to look inferior. And oftentimes our gen ed teachers especially don't have experience with someone with special needs. And I think that drives them. I don't think it's a conscious thing, but I think that's what drives some of their attitudes is, I figured it out. 3 out of their 120 credit hours in college relate directly to special education, and that's it. So they're not trained. It even works with special ed teachers. A lot of them, they have been used to one age group or one kind of disability. And then you throw someone else in there that has something else or is a different age, and they get worried and fearful. So
can I tag something real quick on that?
Of course. Yep. Yeah. 3 minutes.
Yes. Well, it's fast.
Okay.
The teachers also are burdened with standards that are unrealistic, and they are carrying a load that's unbelievable and unrealistic for the children, the students that they have. And that is what drives them a lot of times.
Yeah.
To be unable to be flexible sometimes.
Right.
It's a struggle. We've both seen it, right, Fran?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so very much for joining me today. And Fran, the one that we did a couple of weeks ago has reached almost 700 people now. So even though we haven't had, double digits watching us, although we've gotten close today, it's in those replays where we reached the most people. So if you were joining us for this replay, thank you very much. I hope you have enjoyed this as much as those who were here enjoyed it and that I enjoyed it too. Again, I'm Shelley Kino. This is Fran and Greg. They are friends of mine who also happen to be parents of children with special needs that I have grown to know and love, and am so thankful that I have been able to be part of their families. If you have any questions, whether you're watching this in the replay, or I think we've covered the ones from today, but leave them in the thread. And if I can't answer, or you want to ask one of them specifically, put the note in there and I will be sure to get the question to them and give you their answer and not mine. So again, thank you all so much. Fran and Greg, stay with me for just a minute, but I'm going to end the live broadcast. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the rest of May.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.